So welcome to another episode of the Gonzo Chronicles. This is your host, Cyrus Alderwood, and we're joined tonight with a special guest, Erica Lukes. How you doing tonight, Erica?
You know what? I'm much better now that I'm hanging out with you.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. I really appreciate that. Now I suddenly feel good about myself today.
It's been a You're a cool guy.
It's been a long day. It's been a long week. We were just talking before we hit record here for the show, but I try to tell people, I try to get as many people as I can to follow on, we're on iTunes and Spotify now, and I do tell my friends that if this is not one of your favorite shows by now, that their mother is probably sorely disappointed in them,
Good, I like that strategy.
I'll just guilt the hell out of people into liking the show. Rank it and leave a comment. Tell me what your mother thinks of the show. Just don't let her listen to some of them.
I might need to, hire you to be my backup on that.
Yeah. I mean, if you have to like the show. I tell you, it's in the Bible. You're supposed to. It's right before you get to Revelation, or maybe it's at the end of Revelation. I'm not sure.
That works. That's good. This is good to know. Feel very, very special to be here with you tonight, and I feel very chosen. Thank you.
Well, since we're in the middle of the apocalypse with everything going on in the country.
Seriously. Zombie apocalypse, here we are.
Now, for those who are joining, and a lot of people, they know who you are. If they hear your name, they think, where do I know that name? Just get run down a quick bio for you. They know you from UFOs and Lost Evidence on the Travel Channel. One of my favorite shows, NASA's Unexplained Files on the Science Channel. And probably one of a lot of people's favorite shows, Ancient Aliens on the History Channel. And let's not forget, every Friday night, you have UFO Classified, your own radio show.
Yep.
And people can spend 2 hours with you there. Is it UFOClassified.com? They listen on that site, or do they have to?
Yeah, I'm just in the middle of doing a big upgrade on the website. It's going to be really, really, really cool, and I'll be selling my art and then doing a lot of other things and integrating that with the show and playing lots of videos and of places that I've gone all over the world interviewing people, and so that should be up in the next couple weeks. But it is UFOClassified.com, and be looking out for the big changes that are coming. It'll be great. Excited.
Because you have ericalukes.com that's out there now.
Yep, there's ericalukes.com, and then we're working on that too and kind of merge them all
together,
and we'll see what happens. But I've got some great people working on it. I'm really looking forward to it. It's the step I've needed to take for a long time, and it's going to be positive.
So I was telling a few friends of mine that you're going to be on the show. They were all excited. Yes, Erica Lukes. But we were going to talk about some different things. Like you're always talking UFOs and in that field of study. But we were going to kind of go off the reservation today, so to speak, and talk about some other things. But a friend of mine guilted me. He's like, you got to ask her at least a couple things. So I jotted down a couple things that they wanted me to ask. So we'll get into a little bit of the weird stuff. Not really weird, but we'll get into some of this. But I wanted to kind of jump back in time a little bit though, because one of the phrases that I always heard that kind of stuck in my head is sometimes people don't care so much what you do, but why you do it. But your audience, they care a lot about what you do, because I mean you have an audience that sticks with you through these 2 hour shows. That's a marathon show. And it's like setting down to, you better have a notebook if you're, a notepad if you're taking notes, because you have some really interesting guests on there that kind of are off. They're not your normal names that you hear on these shows that you watch on TV about ufology.
Right. And I purposefully, because I spend 40 hours plus a week researching this and archiving and finding people that I think are of merit, and I just refuse to bring on people that are on the lecture circuit and not all of them, but it's just that you get the same old same old, and the same old isn't moving the topic forward. And so I feel that I need to find people that are doing the hard work behind the scenes and have something really important to say, and it makes for an interesting show. And I also am very happy that I'm doing this on Spreaker now, because I don't have a million commercials, and it's just this organic kind of conversation that flows, and I get a lot of really interesting insight from the people I bring on, and it's been pretty groundbreaking, especially over the past year. I'm really happy with it.
One thing I like about the show is you have a live chat board. So if the audience has a question, like suddenly, and you can, you know, peruse through that, if it's something you feel it's going to fit the topic, then yeah, you can get answers from your guests right away with some of these.
You know, and I love that. I mean, I get so excited when I go into chat every Friday because it's the same group of people. It's getting bigger and bigger every week. And with the more, you know, the TV shows are in, I mean, 50 different countries now and things like that. And the visibility is just increasing. But it's so cool to go in there and see my core group of people, the new people coming in. And it's just, it's like we're a family. And they support the show and they support my passion and I support them. And I feel really blessed to have the listeners that I do because they're intelligent. They care about the topic and they're going to roll with it like I have, regardless of what we find to be the truth. We're going to roll with it and get to the bottom of it.
Now, what initially got you interested in ufology? I mean, you've been doing this for quite a few years. At what age did you kind of start getting interested in this?
You know, probably about 6 or 7. So,
All right.
I was a strange little child, but I mean, I was drawing pictures of spaceships and aliens back in grade school and checking every book I could out about UFOs and Sasquatch and different things. And it's always been a fascinating topic for me. There's always been something that's pulled me in, and I had some, you know, interesting experiences as a child. And then also in my 20s, I lived in a haunted house, and that was Whoa. Just amazing. I mean, it was documented. I had the news crew came out and did a 2-day story on the house. It was built in 1907, and there was a polygamist family that lived next door to my home. And so it was just a very interesting time period where people would come in. I mean, the news recorded something when they were there. And so it was wonderful. And I've always had that sense of knowing that there is something that we just don't have the ability to understand yet. Maybe we never will, but there is something more than the black and white world that most people live in. And it's extraordinary. So how do I learn more about it? How do I empower myself? And how do I also figure out what is complete garbage? And, you know, it's just been an interesting ride. But it's been in me since I was a little one.
So when you first started getting interested in ufology and I guess started picking up books, was there any kind of book that kind of hooked you? Or if, say, somebody's interested in ufology now, but they've only just watched the shows on TV but want to learn more, what direction would you steer them in to take that journey?
Yeah, that's a great and a really important question, because I have learned over my indoctrination in this field that there are, that 99% of the books being written are misleading, and they're I've learned so much. So here's my thought and where I'm coming from now. I believe that there are a lot of people in the quote-unquote UFO field who are in this to make money. They're in this to be popular because they obviously weren't in high school or grade school, and they're trying to make up for something. I don't know what. And then you have the fact that this is an important topic, and you can, you know, bet your life that the intelligence community is in there. They have infiltrated every organization. They are trying to get close to and get information from important researchers in the field. And so they are steering the narrative in a big way. And so I would urge people to step back and look at some of this new stuff that's going on with disclosure, quote unquote disclosure, which is, it's just a load of crap. I'll be very blunt there, and, you know, look away from To the Stars Academy, look away from Skinwalker Ranch, look away from Area 51, because all of these are very, embedded myths. I mean, they were taken from a little bit of truth here, and then there was this great PR team and the intelligence community that have fostered myths about all of these areas to distract us from the real truth. And so I just have to say, if you're going to do anything, run away and see that for what it is, because it isn't factual. It's not truthful.
You hit on something that was really interesting there, that I've been doing some reading myself lately on ways to, I guess, I don't want to say control population, but control the narrative. When you mentioned that the intelligence community was involved in infiltrating, and they do psyops and counter ops in these fields, but I've been reading about the direct line and relationship from Hollywood and the music industry direct to intelligence communities, and not just here, but you know, globally. You know, Europe and Britain, and then you know the U.S. here, obviously, and. I didn't know this, but one of the things that I read was even when TV first got started and you had the three big networks, ABC, CBS, and NBC, that the first – and I could be wrong on this, so you know, if you're listening, go look this up and verify for yourself. But it seems like that I read that the first president of CBS Corporation was former was a guy who worked in Naval Intelligence.
I would not be surprised at all.
Because, you know, television, you know, just say it slowly, tell a vision.
Programming.
Yes, it is programming. And music is the same way. There were a lot of people, I'm reading a book now that I heard a guest on a podcast not even a week ago. And I was listening to this guest, and I was like, I have to read this guy's books. I get it, and I can't put it down. And he is showing the direct link between people back in the 60s and 70s that were part of that counterculture movement.
Yes.
And changing the culture and how intelligence communities were involved in that. And,
yes.
And actually getting them set up and giving them a platform to change the culture. As a matter of fact, Jim Morrison from The Doors, one of my favorite bands, you know, ironically,
absolutely.
His father was in, I think his father worked as, was he admiral of the Navy or something? Or he was high up. I think maybe he might have worked in intelligence as well.
Right.
Again,
it was interesting how a lot of those, you know, great bands in the 60s, you know, like The Doors, like you mentioned.
Grateful Dead was another band.
Connection, yeah. Connections with the military. Some of the members in the band, you know, were related. And I find that, you know, now with my work, I find that really, you know, an important connection, and thanks for bringing that up, because it is true, and it's really interesting. You look back at some of the people that were in that community, you know, back in the 60s. You look at Sidney Gottlieb, who is, you know, the CIA medical torturer. I mean, just a really nasty human being who obviously thought he was doing a greater service for I'm not sure what, but would you know, there were funds moved to a lot of different universities, which we see now. We just need to step back and look at things. And then you look at the kind of the experiments they were doing, mind control. You look at some of the other horrible, horrible things that they were experimenting on. And then you look at what has been happening, and you look at the UFO community and just think, okay, here we go. We've got Hal Puthoff, who first received funding from Sidney Gottlieb, you know, back in the early 70s, and Dr. Gottlieb. And then you look at some of the, you know, SRI, you look at some of these other things that started spinning out of that. And then you look at Close Encounters, and you look at the media and the way they started to portray the aliens. And it was really interesting. I watched Close Encounters about three nights ago, again, for the millionth time. And each time I watch that movie, I am noticing more and more, and I just sit back there and I'm like, are you really freaking kidding me? I mean, they're talking about, you know, they're getting ready to go up to the mountain and see the mothership coming in because they figured out the latitude and longitude. I mean, they're talking about, they make these little casual comments about, oh, well, you know, the sheep, and, you know, we could use anthrax and yada, yada, yada. And all of these little phrases that they're inserting in there have reference to Dugway Proving Ground with the sheep incident back in 1968. And, you know, all of these, the cattle mutilations, they brought up cattle mutilations, and that they were going to use cattle mutilations as a distraction. And I'm just sitting there going, oh my God, I did never realize that. And I'm so glad I went back and I watched that movie. And then there's also a section in the movie where they have, they're going by like the military, and, you know, they're Richard Dreyfuss is making his attempt to scale that to rendezvous with the mothership. And, you know, he goes by all of these crates that say Lockheed on them. Okay, this is 1977.
Yeah.
And it's just like, really? Okay, so you've got the dead cows by the side of the road. You've got all of this stuff, which they're just, you know, again, putting out the same thing to kind of collectively brainwash us. Okay, so we can have the cattle mutilations, and was that in all actuality alien? No, it probably wasn't. It was probably them testing for something. And then you've got, you know, all of these other, oh, let's throw in Lockheed, ha, funny, and the dead sheep. And I mean, it's just like, what? And I also want to just throw this in here because I'm on a roll, but I watched The Man Who Fell to Earth with David Bowie again the other day, and watching that from different eyes than I did when I was in my teenage years, it really struck me that this was probably a propaganda piece, just like Close Encounters, as much as I love both of the movies. But in the movie, you've got General Motors that is in, you know, is placed. You can see the logo on the building and different things. And if people understand a little bit about General Motors, well, they've been rumored to be a front for the intelligence community, the CIA. And so it's like, whoa, you step back and you look at all of this programming that we have had decade after decade, and the way that the aliens have been inserted into the narrative, and the way that, you know, all of a sudden here we've got people that are being abducted. But again, is that just, are people being abducted by aliens, or is it something more terrestrial? And can they use the UFO community to create a huge cover so they can excuse all of this? And if somebody says anything, well, they're crazy, they're into UFOs. So I think that there's a lot of covert and really nasty things that have gone on. And the more I look at this, and the more I put the pieces of the puzzle together, the more I have to warn the public that this is what we have been fed is bought and paid for by the company store.
Yeah, and it's the subtle things, like you said, in a movie. That the more repetitive you see it, it just becomes part of what you think, whether you know it or not. It's like people, and I hate to, I'm not going to get political, but people who sit and watch the damn news 24/7, they don't think for themselves. They're just like repeating an argument that they've heard over and over. And regardless of which side of anyone's aisle, it just doesn't matter. But it's programming, and Hollywood is an expert at it.
Well, and when you look at the fact that the CIA has been in bed with Hollywood, for as long as, because it's a powerful media. I mean, it's a way to influence people. I mean, you make people feel comfortable, you make them laugh, you make them frightened. You elicit all these emotions in them, and it is a great way to control things. And it's kind of funny to me that we think we are so free, and yet we are so manipulated. And we really have to look at all of these ways that this is taking place and disengage and understand it for what it is.
The thing that you said, I'll just to key on a word there, and then I'll move on to another topic here I wanted to touch base on with you. But, feelings, like when you feel things, and that's what they want you to do, whether it's a song that moves you or a movie that moves you. If you're feeling, you're not thinking. And that's, there's a big distinction.
Yep, absolutely. It's been, I mean, like I said, these are things that I've just have been slowly over the years putting together. And I always encourage people to, if you want to really look at UFOs and to step outside and to look in other places. And for me, that has been the biggest help for my research, because I'm stepping out and I'm looking at the CIA. I'm looking at Sidney Gottlieb and the players, Alan Dulles, and all of the people that were involved that have interestingly, you can hear some of their names that are thrown out there in the UFO narrative because they've incorporated them in this mythical little land. And it's been, so it's a great cover for things, but it's just, we got to be on top of our game.
Yeah. Right, I now recently drank some Kool-Aid by accident. Saw this, I buy stuff on Amazon all the time, books, I read a lot. And I saw this book about the UFO disclosure in the Trump era. Oh, I bought it because I recognize the name. It's somebody I've seen on these shows a lot, and I'll not mention it. But, what a waste. What a waste. I was about 10 pages. I'm like, really, all you're doing is just seeing, regurgitating documents that really mean nothing to the entire thing. And so I left a comment on Amazon. I'd never, if I don't like a book, I just don't you know, I'm not going to shit on somebody's work because I've written 10 myself, you know, so I know how much work people put into them, but it's like, dude, it's like, don't drink the Kool-Aid on this one. I'd give this one a hard pass, you know. I'm sure the guy made plenty of money on other stuff, but when I read it, it's like, stamped his name on it, put a cool title on it, something hip, and, yeah, he just, it's to make money, so.
Well, and I think it is interesting, you bring up another good point that I just want to touch on. I think you have to step back and also look at the political motivations of the UFO movement. And I think right now, because we've got a lot of money that is being funneled into defense and aerospace contractors, that it is going to be, you know, we're going to see this threat narrative emerge, the threat. We better, you know, work with Boeing and Lockheed and, you know, yada, 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 do all this stuff. And I think it's, you know, that you typically see, what I'm trying to say, I'm going to try to be delicate about this, is I believe that there are people that are trying to use the UFO narrative to get funding. And those are defense and aerospace contractors. And I think they have a need to steer the threat narrative. And so they're using To the Stars Academy, and they're using specific political ideologies to steer that narrative. And so, again, that's just something to be mindful of, because there is no threat that I've ever gleaned from what we're dealing with. And I think that the biggest threat is from some of these people that are conning all of us and playing games.
Yeah, that could be very true. Now, I do have a theory on the cattle mutilations, if you want to hear this.
Yeah.
All right. It's kind of tongue-in-cheek. Listen, cattle, like, when you get out into space, it's like the Wild West. There has to be, like, intergalactic capitalism, I'm convinced. It's too big to be, like, reining everything in with the socialism. So it's got to be, like, Wild West capitalism. And there's probably some burger joints on the edge of the galaxy somewhere. And we have the best cattle anywhere in the galaxy. And so cattle mutilations is all about burgers. that's my theory.
First of all, my cat just hissed when you said that, and then I just turn around and my husband's over there with his guitar kind of creeping around, and I'm like, oh my God. So you say that, and I'm sorry, I've just had a little start there, but I back to your story. I think that, yeah, I like your thought.
Intergalactic space burgers. It's what it's about.
Space burgers. That's good to me.
And where else
than the reality, probably.
And where else are you going to find a sweet leather jacket to boot?
You exactly.
So anyway, that's my dumb theory of the night. Hey, I did want to get into something that, you know, not a lot of people know this, but you know, you've been artistic pretty much your whole life. You come from it, honestly, right from your family. Your father, I think you'd mentioned at one point, was very artistic in painting, and the music bug bit you. And a lot of people don't know this, but I think, was this the name of the band, Straight No Chaser?
Yeah, it was in Straight No Chaser and then Zion Tribe, and I've been in, oh my gosh, I mean, lots of different bands in my 25-year career.
You actually played in 2002 at the Olympic Games in Utah.
You know, I did. I played twice there. I played once with Zion Tribe and once with Straight No Chaser, and so that was really a great honor to have that opportunity to play for everybody, and it was really, really, really cold.
Now, you know, I just did a YouTube search earlier on Straight No Chaser.
Yeah.
And apparently it's a song too. Now, I'm a jazz fan, so I was so thrilled to see that not only did Miles Davis have a version of it,
yes,
but so did Thelonious Monk. And if you haven't,
Thelonious Monk, that's what I named the band after, because I just absolutely love that song, and it spoke to me at that point in my life, and so I formed the jazz band, and yeah, it was cool.
So do you have any favorite, like, jazz music you listen to now?
If, you know, I'm a big Peggy Lee fan, and she was always an inspiration to me. I mean, she could, you know, rile up all the boys and knock out fever. And I mean, just, you know, I'm a Woman and all of these incredible songs. And she could, you know, she was such a sassy creature. You know, I loved that. My grandpa always said, yeah, he was a big Peggy Lee fan. If Peggy Lee ever came to town, I'd leave your grandma. I was like, okay, Grandpa, I don't need to know this, but whatever. But I mean, it was just funny. So she was very inspirational to me. Of course, Ella Fitzgerald.
I was about to
one of the most exceptional voices. Yes. Sarah Vaughan. at Lena Horne was another big inspiration in my jazz.
Yeah, if somebody doesn't like Ella Fitzgerald and Miles Davis, I might question their patriotism.
You know, I would too. I mean, Nat King Cole. I mean, Nat King Cole, yes, in my opinion, is one of the most amazing. He was a gift from God. I mean, he was just not only a beautiful voice that sounded like satin, but his arrangement skills, the way he could play the piano. I mean, he was just in every phrase. I mean, it was just with such passion, and that was, you know, he is really a legend in my mind.
And Dave Brubeck. I'm that kind of nerd. I like that. I like Dave Brubeck.
Yeah, I like Dave Brubeck, yeah.
Now, are you any plans to kind of get the band back together or try some new artists?
You know what, I write and record music, and I still, you know, do that. And I actually, one of my old friends from choir back in the college days gave me her grandmother's Hammond organ from the 50s. And so I've been kind of working on my piano skills, and then I'm, you know, like I said, writing songs and recording them when I can. I'm kind of pulled in multiple directions, but I would love to get the band back together and do things. And I also, my husband is a professional musician and toured Europe and the United States, and was playing with you know, the guy from Suicidal Tendencies and
no kidding.
So yeah, I mean, he's really an incredible music guitar player and bass player. And so we've been putzing around and toying around with the idea that we're actually going to record some duets and then put that out there, which I think would be really cool.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you guys had recorded anything together yet.
Well, we're working on it. Oh. I'm teaching him some jazz. He's teaching me about, you know, hard, heavy metal. And I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. It's never a dull moment, but he's brilliant.
Hey,
so.
If he gets bored, one of my previous episodes, I did top 20 hair bands of the 80s.
Oh, sweet.
Oh, yeah. And I know they hate being called hair bands, but that's just what everybody calls them.
I would say, judging by my husband's hair back in the 80s and 90s, yeah, hair band is a great way to describe it.
Yeah, but I was always, you know, that's kind of the weird thing about this show. We can go from UFOs to, and you know, government conspiracies and CIA psyops to, you know,
to big hair.
Who knew? And I really wanted to bring Headbangers Ball back with that original guy, Ricky Rackman.
Loved him.
Yeah, that was my formative years. I do miss the 90s.
The 90s were good.
Yeah, and I'm still trying to convince everybody that I'm the official spokesman for Generation X. I don't know if that's going to catch on, but, you know, we'll see. They said, who was it? The guy from Nirvana. What was his name?
Kurt Cobain.
Said he was a spokesman of our generation. And I'm thinking, well, maybe, but hell, I couldn't half understand anything he was singing. You know, not that the music was bad. It's like I wasn't into grunge at the time. But like later on, I kind of got a little bit of appreciation for it. But like, man, what the hell is he saying? I can't.
I know. It was funny because my husband was in LA and doing. They were on the verge of getting a record contract, and then Nirvana came out. And that just completely
just destroyed
I mean, like
everything.
Whole, you know, yeah. I mean, it really it did things, and then, you know, but I guess it changed that Nirvana and Co. and Pearl Jam and all those guys changed the musical narrative. So.
They really did. It's one of those moments like before and like what was before and what was after. You know.
Yeah.
It's like and like the, you know, the Beatles, and then everything changed, and then
yeah, Soundgarden, yeah, and I mean it's you know, I mean that was an important. Period of music that I actually really loved. I loved Soundgarden. They were great. Stone Temple Pilots.
Yeah, great stuff. You know, the thing with the, just we're getting off track here, but the Pearl Jam, they were such a good band. But a couple of the, two or three of the members were actually in a band before that called Mother Love Bone.
Yes.
Out of Seattle.
Yep.
One album, and then I think somebody died from like bone china, right? Whatever heroin they were doing, but it was. What an amazing, amazing album. I still have that to this day, and I still listen to it on a regular basis. Can't go wrong with some of that era.
I know. That's the cool thing. I mean, I love music. I mean, there's not an era that I don't, you know, love music. I mean, I love 50s music and 60s, and, you know, you've got the Supremes and oh my gosh, I'm thinking of that great, the Spinners, and you've got all of the, I mean, just there's some, just incredible music, and there's not a period that I really don't like it, but I will say that I'm not a real big country fan, but, you know, I can maybe have a couple margaritas and, you know, do okay with Kenny Chesney.
Yeah, I'm not much into country either, but where I live at, that's like every other radio station, unfortunately. But speaking of being artistic, you paint as well.
You know, I do. I this is interesting. When I kind of stopped doing the band stuff, because after 25 years and you're gigging all the time and staying up until 3 a.m, and it just, it kind of loses its luster because it becomes a really hard job. I kind of pulled inward, and I was also, this is when I was really getting into the UFO thing, and I had a couple personal experiences, and then I really decided that I was going to start painting. And so I picked up a paintbrush, thanks to one of my friends who brought me a watercolor set. And then I just started just feverishly painting, and painting clouds and skies and different things. And I just fell in love with it. And I didn't grow up with my father, but I've started the process of getting to know him in my adult life, and he is one of the best realist painters in the world, and has received awards from every country, and he's amazing. And so he's been teaching me a little bit, and I love it.
Now, you do a lot of landscape portraits. I noticed you kind of like work some aliens in some of these too.
You know, I did have my little alien thing. I went up to Skinwalker Ranch. I was right on the periphery and had some interesting experiences up there. And I came back, and during that time period, I really started drawing a lot of my interpretations of what I saw or what was taking place with personal experiences, and then I started incorporating the aliens and things, and actually people really like them. I've sold quite a few pieces, so it's awesome.
Yeah, and I saw some of these on ericalukes.com, and there's a couple of them. It's like, I think I might want to buy one, but I was surprised how reasonably priced they are.
You know what? I want people to be able to have them. And with the watercolors, I can paint them and not take as much time as I would in some of my oil paintings, which I have a couple oil paintings. I've got two landscapes, 3 foot by 3 foot, that are, you know, a couple $1,000, but those are, you know, that's taken me a lot of time. So
most of the ones I've seen, you can get for under 200 or, you know, 125. Yeah. Very reasonable stuff. So what are you working on now?
I am working on a watercolor landscape, an oil landscape, and I'm going to take my landscape art and start incorporating little UFOs, kind of sly UFOs, so people can try to find them in the photo and different things, or in the painting, and so that's what I'm working on. But I love painting clouds, and apparently, according to a lot of different artists, painting clouds is one of the hardest things to do, and so I've made it my mission that I'm going to perfect painting clouds.
Yeah, I can try to draw stick figures, so kudos on that kind of talent. I really wish.
Well, that's why I had to go to aliens, because I'm like my people. In fact, I remember when I first started this, and I don't know what I was thinking. I tried to do a little portrait of my daughter when she was a year old, and that looked like the most ugly alien man baby you've ever seen in your life. I mean, I still have it. I'll have to post it just for fun, because I'll pay for your therapy. But I remember like showing that to her, and she's like, "Mother, don't ever do that again. I never want you to paint me. Don't draw me. That's you've so traumatized fun. Me for life and stuff." And so, that was been there, done that, and I'm not painting any more babies unless they're alien man babies.
So will you have all of your work brought over to the new site when things get yes. I guess, brought together? Okay.
I will.
All right, yeah. So how many paintings do you have?
Oh, my gosh. I've probably got maybe 40.
Okay, because I only saw a handful that.
I need to get them photographed and get them on there and things. I have lots of different oil paintings and seascapes and things that I need to get on there, and also some nudes. I was in that phase where I was trying to, you know, really perfect the human body and different things, and so, you know, I will get them up there, and I'm excited.
I've been a professional model wearing Speedos. No, I'm totally kidding. I'm totally kidding.
Okay, well, I could do a portrait for you.
Well, imagine Jabba the Hutt. That's because I have got what was that movie, Spaceballs? I've become Pizza the Hutt. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, staying in, like, there's a little local Italian place that when they deliver, it's like an audience is there. I was like, you have no idea. You literally just saved my life. I was going to die if you didn't show up, you know.
Dang it. I want some Italian food now.
Yeah, well, it saves trouble, like, with, you know, doing dishes, washing dishes. Yeah. I'm not a big fan of that. Don't mind the laundry, the dishes. No, not so much. But I did want to, I wanted to bring up something a friend of mine actually had, got a couple of questions that kind of come in. One was to ask about the collection you have on all of your archives. Are you planning on at some point having like an official museum where those that are in ufology can come and see your archives, see the research that you've collected from all over the place?
Yes, and another great question. So thank you for bringing that up. I have for the past decade, even longer than that, I mean, I've been collecting different things, and I've been very fortunate enough to have people like Keith Chester, Fran Ridge, you know, Barry Greenwood has helped with, you know, getting archives. Gordon Lohr donated his work from the NICAP days, which is really important. And then the latest acquisition of mine are the Androffel files, which is 60 years worth of research and her library and things that you just would, I mean, just make your head spin. And also in that collection, 100 audio cassette interviews with people like Jacques Vallée and, you know, the likes, Gordon Lohr, all of these, you know, Bill Moore, all of these people. And so I am in the process of digitizing that, the Androffel collection right now. And I do have the archive, my archive in a commercial space in my business. And so it is open to the public with a reservation. There are lots of obviously original documents there, so I want to make sure that they stay where they are, but they are absolutely, if a researcher calls me up and says, hey, I need A, B, C, and D, then that is great. I will help them. And I'm also going to be establishing a non-for-profit and try to get donations coming in that way. And if somebody needs me to extensively go in and look through things and scan them and get them to them, then I would hope that they would be kind enough to make a donation for my work and things. But it's been an expensive process. I have, you know, traveled and it costs a lot to do this, to get things, but I think it is something that I want to get out there and tell people about, educate them about, and then give them the opportunity to come in to the archive and learn more about the history of the subject and the great people who've dedicated their lives.
Yeah, I think I remember hearing you mention that you're in the early stages of working on a book.
I am working on a book with my dear friend, Gordon Lohr, who was with NICAP, like I was mentioning, back in the late 60s, and did some very, very important work. He worked with Dr. James McDonald, and that was back in the day when researching UFOs really meant something. That was there was a lot of integrity in the subject back then, and so he's helping me co-author a book about my life, and now we're in specifically, you know, my trials with MUFON and learning about the corruption there, and then also my discoveries with Skinwalker Ranch and some of the potentials for human experimentation and different things like that. And so it will be really great when it comes out, and I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. And another question that I'd gotten to ask was, if you could tell us a little, well, you live in Utah, and right, if there's one place that you can live, if you have a possibility of seeing some weird stuff in the sky, well, you're at ground zero. And so I've got one question that asked if you could talk a little bit about Project Orange, and then was that in any way related to research that you did in was it Haslen, Norway?
Hashtalen, yeah. Okay. I like that question. I when I was with MUFON, I, as state director for Utah, I was, you know, I would comb the database. And now I know that there were lots of really good cases that were missing from that database. But what I did see that was available to state directors was, you know, there were lots of lights in the sky cases, and these quote unquote lights in the sky cases were getting dismissed. And it was interesting because a lot of the investigators weren't doing their due diligence and looking at the weather conditions and looking at the wind and looking at to see if there were any planes in the area or, you know, where military testing was, all these different things. And they were dismissing a lot of these things and saying they were Chinese lanterns or, you know, they were, you know, A, B, C, and D, because it was just, you know, it's all cool to call yourself an investigator and then spend 1 minute doing something and saying it's a Chinese lantern. But I could see that there was a pattern there, and there were specific orange orb sightings that were taking place, and they were in specific areas, and it was repeated. And so I reached out to a couple different people and created Project Orange, and we wanted to go through the database. Our goal was to do that and then really crunch all of the data and figure out where locations, where the active locations were, and then to look at some of the other commonalities in things. And I ended up resigning from MUFON, and that project obviously is you know, it came and went. But for me, I knew that there was something important. I know there is something important, and that's what led me to journey to Norway and work with Professor Erling Strand and see some of the top scientists from Europe over there in Hessdalen. And they were actually really conducting good research on the anomalous light phenomena, and that was very, very cool. And so to me, I think, you know, we tend to dismiss a lot of things when we should be looking at them. And then we tend to look at things that we should be dismissing. So we just need to, you know, get it straight here in this field.
What was the result of that investigation there?
You know, for Project Orange,
mm-hmm.
you know, Robert Spearing had identified, you know, several places. We'd all looked at different places in the country where there were specific sightings, and there were sightings, specific sightings that were occurring, reoccurring, and they were over bodies of water. They were near military installations and also over Native American reservations. And so those were the three commonalities. And then also there we were looking at, towards the end of the project, you know, if there was something that would be, if there was some sort of mineral or rare earth that these things were attracted to. And so we were kind of looking at all of those things and trying to piece the puzzles together and then rule out, you know, things that could be military. And that is something, again, that I'd like to pick up, because I think it would be a fascinating study. And that's honestly, those are the most important sightings that you see. And you see a lot of reports of these amber orange spheres that hover above mountain lines and all sorts of things. And over in Norway, that was very common, and they spent 35 years researching that type of light phenomenon.
That's pretty fascinating. So you study things that maybe not necessarily, excuse me, all things UFO, but other anomalies as well.
You know, I do. I think you can't just put this in one little box. I think you have to study all sorts of things and then get ideas from each area of study or field. And then also look at, I think it's really important to look at the history of the subject, and there's so many things that come into play. You know, now I definitely feel that a majority of things that we're seeing are probably man-made. But like I said, there is something important and a really great research project, Project Hessdalen. And that's a place that I would definitely encourage people to look at. You can go to projecthessdalen.org and check out. They've got a live camera, and they also have videos for the past, 10, 15 years, where students are out there observing this light phenomenon. It's incredible.
When you were over in Europe, did you ever get an opportunity, and this is my question I was going to ask, to visit Stonehenge?
I did go to Stonehenge, yep.
What are your thoughts on it?
You know what? My thoughts were, it was, I mean, it's absolutely incredible. I loved Avebury a little bit more because you could get up close and personal and touch the stones and all of these things. I think Stonehenge is so unfortunately commercialized now. I mean, it was like you had to move through in a horde of people and you're, you know, so I it was beautiful. And I think some of these wonderful sites are, you know, potentially harness a lot of power, at least people back that, you know, that created these wonderful monuments, they felt that way. I mean, I just, Avebury, like I said, that Avebury is more interesting to me than Stonehenge.
No, I don't know. I have to look up and do some research on Avebury, but with Stonehenge and like other parts of the world, they say are connected by ley lines.
Right.
Do you think there's any, is there any validity to that theory?
You know what? I mean, I have heard that for a long, long time, and I just, my area of focus has moved so far away from that I don't know if there is validity to that. I mean, it's definitely an interesting idea, but like I said, I've just been, just my focus has gone so much in the other direction, and there are a million things to study when it comes to this topic.
Yeah, and I've found that, you know, just from my fascination, and I'm no researcher by any stretch or investigator, but just my fascination with these topics, it is so easy to learn on one topic and then get pulled to another that you kind of know a little bit about everything, but not enough to be dangerous about any one thing, you know? So when it comes to a lot of the research and stuff, even though I can read what you're doing and like, yeah, I still don't know my head from my ass at the end of the day. And that's the frustrating thing. Cause I'm one of these people. I want an answer. I like to know. And, you know, what is the explanation? You know, the Phoenix Lights, what were the explanation to that? The Orange, Project Orange you were talking about, you know, what is it? Some sort of version of swamp gas, even though there's swamps there, but you know, was that, you know, so even to the haunted house you were talking about, you grew up in.
Right. I know, all of it is just, it's fascinating. And there, like I said, there's so many aspects to this and so many rabbit holes you could go down and different things. But I, you know, for me, I mean, I know that there is something out there. I don't know what it is. I can't say it's Grandma Moses back from the dead to say hello. I can't say it's, you know, the blue avians coming down to, you know, give me their little nanu-nanu salute or whatever they do. I can't say it's, you know, I mean, any one of these things. But there is something that is greater than me, something that is interacting with us, and it, the whole process of just trying to figure it out has been a great ride, and I would never stop doing this.
And I hope it's, you know, you mentioned a movie earlier, the Close Encounters of the Third Kind. One of my, that's what, when I was a kid and I saw that, that's what got me interested in this field, and kind of, again, all things weird, you know, ET. I mean, I know they're movies, but you know, sometimes it takes things like that to get people interested enough into taking that step and learning and trying to find answers for themselves. And, you know, hopefully whether it's this show, your show, any other show or movie can maybe spark that, enthusiasm in somebody to kind of step out there and do their own thing. And, you never know. Could be somebody who's 15 years old listening to this or listening to your show. That's 20 years from now, a pioneer.
And that is exactly it. And I think it's, you know, I wanted to stress because sometimes, you know, unfortunately my research with Skinwalker Ranch and some of these other things has taken kind of a dark turn because you get into the intelligence community and some of the potentials for them doing things that aren't necessarily in our best interest. But I think that you know, it is important to give people the knowledge of these things so they understand that when you get into it, you can't just, you know, I mean, like I look back at myself going to conferences, you know, and walking by rooms of quote unquote abductees that are being hypnotized. And, you know, I mean, those are things that I thought, you know, okay, that's kind of cool back then. And now I'm looking at it going, oh my Lord, now that I've learned more about, you know, Dr. Gottlieb and some of these, you know, attempts to control the mind and different things. But I think that One thing I will say, though, is I have enriched my life in so many ways. You know, I've learned about astronomy. I've learned about geology. I've learned about human behavior. I've learned about, you know, the search for extraterrestrial life. I mean, there have been so many. And I've learned about defense and aerospace contractors and different things. I mean, I haven't just learned about one thing. And it has been, the whole process it's empowering, it's amazing, it enriches your life. And not only that, I've met some of the best people that I've ever met in my life, you know, my husband included. I never would have met him if it wasn't for Skinwalker Ranch and different things like that. And so it really, you know, I would encourage people to get into this and to learn as much as you can. And I would warn people to stay away from the big, bright, shiny objects, Area 51, you know, all of that, Roswell, all of those things that are clearly being used to manipulate the public and to distract them away from really going places where they can empower themselves.
Yeah. I still want to visit those places just as, I don't know, you know, just for fun, actually.
Right. Oh, yeah. I was out by Area 51. I've been there and done that and things, and they are, I mean, they're truly iconic places. I mean, it's been such an important part of the myth of all of this.
Yeah, it really has. And it's, you know, I guess for me, it kind of made it fun in a way. But, you know, once you go down this rabbit hole, you can't really walk that back. Because, you know, if you really are searching for truth, the more truth you find, then the more dangerous you are to some people that don't want that information out there.
You know what? I never would have believed that. But yes, I think given that some of the things that have happened to me, I can say that, yes, that is absolutely the truth. And there have been, I mean, I have had people walk into my studio and ask to see my modem. And I mean, just some really, my computer's been hacked. I've had some really interesting things take place, and also there have been attempts by people that are very prominent in the field who have worked with, you know, defense contracts and different things that have tried to befriend me and try to give me information to steer my narrative. And so that's been a really interesting process to also kind of step back and learn, okay, who are the people that are attempting to push me off path, and, you know, why is that? And I know I'm digging close to the truth. I know I'm seeing a lot, and I'm going to continue to push the envelope.
I'm hearing that X-Files.
It is in our best interest, you know?
I'm hearing that theme to X-Files in my head right now. Yes. but I certainly do appreciate you taking the time and taking some of the questions that were given to me to ask. Your show is Friday night at 7 Eastern?
It is Friday night, 7 Eastern time. It's on Spreaker under UFO Classified Erica Lukes. And then the website it's up now, but the big cool site, the unveiling, will be in a couple weeks, and that's ufoclassified.com or ericalukes.com. And that's going to be a lot of fun. I'm excited to start this new chapter of my life and to get the book finished and all that good stuff.
Who's on the show this week?
You know, I am going to actually have Pia Knudsen, who is, she is from UFOs Denmark. And so she has done a lot of work over the years, and she's hosted some amazing people in the topic over there. And we have a lot in common. She's digging in the same places that I'm digging, and it's going to be a good show.
Good. So, yeah, and in a couple of weeks when the website gets up, I hope everybody jumps over there, checks it out. Definitely check out your paintings. You do some really great work. It's,
thank you.
So thanks for talking about that lighter side tonight and getting into the music and the art. So.
No, I love it. And I'm going to go listen to some Soundgarden right now. You've inspired me. I need to get back to my 90s self with my big old hair and my shoulder pads.
Well, do it. You know what? I'd go back and relive the 90s if I knew I wouldn't get in trouble. But see, my 90s, I went to college and I went to grad school, and everybody said I had a great time. Well, at least according to the lawsuit. So, you know, I could have had it's like Will Ferrell in Old School, probably. But
Frank, that's kind of hot. That's okay.
But no, I had a great time. Let's just put it that way and leave it at that. But thanks again, Erica. You're welcome
Thank
back
you.
Anytime. I'm sure we got plenty of other things we could chat about. You've done so much work. So thanks
Absolutely.
Again.
Thank you so much. I always have so much fun with you.
I appreciate you coming on. Have a good night, Erica. We'll talk soon.
You too. All right, take care.
Take care.
Bye.
All right, everyone. Hey, thanks for tuning in to this edition of Gonzo Chronicles. Certainly appreciate it. Thanks again to Erica. UFOclassified.com. Check it out in a couple of weeks. Check out her paintings. Buy one of those suckers because they're actually I think I'm going to buy one too. Thanks again for tuning in. Check me out on CyrusAlderwood.com. I might actually try to update the website in the next week or so. I've been the laziest SOB. I know this. But, you know, hey, it's who I am, right? I'm going to go listen to some Thelonious Monk. Maybe some, some Ella Fitzgerald tonight. Chill out a little bit. Relive the 90s on YouTube. Thanks again. Also check me out on Amazon.com, Cyrus Alderwood. I would love it if it's Halloween's coming up. I got some horror you can buy. But I'd love it if some of you guys would actually pick up Gonzo Chronicles 1 and 2. They're short books. They're on Kindle and paperback. $12.95 paperback, $4.99 Kindle. Hell, you spend more than that on a damn cup of coffee on the way to work. Thanks again, everybody. Have a great night, and we'll talk to you down the road.